For War News Radio at Swarthmore College, I'm John Gagnon.
And I'm Evan Grennan.
President Obama recently announced the CIA inadvertently killed two humanitarian aid workers kidnapped by Al-Qaeda during a drone strike in Pakistan in January. 73-year-old Warren Weinstein, an American aid worker and economic advisor who had previously served in Africa and South Asia, was stationed in Pakistan for over a decade before he was kidnapped by Al-Qaeda in 2011. 39-year-old Italian national Giovanni Porto was abducted in 2012 after he moved to Pakistan to work for a German NGO. President Obama addressed the nation earlier this week.
As president and as commander-in-chief, I take full responsibility for all our counterterrorism operations, including the one that inadvertently took the lives of Warren and Giovanni. I profoundly regret what happened. On behalf of the United States government, I offer our deepest apologies to the families.
While not mentioned in the president's remarks, U.S. officials also acknowledged that another American, Ahmed Farouk, who had joined Al-Qaeda years earlier, was also killed during the strikes. In addition, a third American, Adam Gadan, was killed in a separate drone attack in Pakistan within a week of the strike that killed the two hostages and Farouk. Gadan had converted to Islam and joined Al-Qaeda over 10 years ago. While the president defended his administration's highly criticized use of drones in the counterterrorism effort, Obama called for an independent investigation into the drone strike that killed the Al-Qaeda hostages.
The Saudi-led airstrike campaign against Houthi rebels in Yemen will enter a new stage, announced Saudi Ambassador Adel Al-Jubeir. After almost a month of high-intensity airstrikes, the initial phase, called Operation Decisive Storm, has ended, and Operation Renewal of Hope has begun. This new phase will draw down military action while preventing Houthi rebels from regaining ground in the country. A day before this announcement, Saudi forces launched a devastating attack on the Yemeni capital, Sana'a, which resulted in at least 25 deaths. These casualties add to the UN-estimated 360 civilian deaths since near-daily airstrikes by the Saudi government began more than 3 weeks ago. Meanwhile, the U.S. deployed two more warships to the waters off of Yemen in support of the Saudi campaign, a measure taken in response to Iran's continuation of arms shipments to the Houthi rebels. Saudi aggression in Yemen has received criticism from humanitarian organizations, such as Oxfam and the United Nations.
A roadside bomb killed four people and injured more outside a restaurant frequented by politicians in the Somalian capital of Mogadishu. No group has claimed responsibility for the attack. 2 days prior to the bombing, seven United Nations aid workers were killed in a roadside bombing by the militant Islamist group Al-Shabaab in the northwestern regions of the country. The group also struck twice last week at the capital, assassinating a legislator and killing 19 people outside the Ministry of Higher Education. Al-Shabaab has been driven out of the capital, as well as other major towns it once controlled, but remained strong in southern Somalia.
U.S. defense officials reported that North Korean KN-08 ballistic missiles may have an operational range of 5,600 miles, powerful enough to reach the coast of California. While the KN-08 can theoretically carry a nuclear warhead, U.S. Admiral William Gortney noted that the missiles have not been tested and that he has a high confidence that U.S. missile defense systems would be successful in the event of a launch. Chinese experts recently reported that North Korea's capacity to produce weapons-grade uranium is higher than previously thought. North Korea may have as many as 20 warheads currently available and the production capability to double their arsenal by next year. In addition to the KN-08, North Korea has a stockpile of missiles capable of reaching North Korea and Japan.
An Egyptian court sentenced former President Mohamed Morsi to 20 years in prison. Morsi and 14 other members of the Muslim Brotherhood were found guilty of inciting violence against protesters during a 2012 sit-in outside of the presidential palace. The group was acquitted of premeditated murder, avoiding the death penalty. Morsi faces several other trials in the coming months, with charges ranging from plotting terrorism to leaking government documents to Al Jazeera. Morsi served as president between June 2012 and July 2013, when he was removed by a military coup led by current President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi.
At least 30,000 people marched through Johannesburg in protest of anti-immigrant violence over the last few weeks. Attacks concentrated mainly in Johannesburg's Gauteng province have left at least 7 people dead and 5,000 homeless. Many foreign businesses have also been looted. anti-immigrant sentiment is high in much of the country, where the official unemployment rate is 25%. Defense Minister Noseviwa Mapisa Nyakula has sent troops to contain violence, but says the army will be used as a last resort. Anti-immigrant violence has raised the memory of apartheid for many protesters in Johannesburg. David Makura, premier of the Gauteng province, says the country will defeat xenophobia like we defeated apartheid.
Next up, War News Radio is presenting the content from our partner radio station, Yaksani FM, in Lusaka, Zambia. We bring to you content from reporter Mabine Katangulu on climate change affecting women farmers.
According to African Women in Agricultural Research and Development, female farmers play a vital role in African agriculture, accounting for 60 to 80% of the agricultural workforce. This in itself means that majority rural women's livelihood is much dependent on agriculture. Now, non-governmental organization coordinating council NGOCC executive director Ingwase Mwale has expressed fears that the change in rainfall pattern of Zambia will adversely affect the majority women in the country.
We've seen in Zambia of late that climate change is having a toll on our country. We have seen the rain patterns that are really not certain in terms of giving us hope that our agricultural sector, for example, is going to flourish. We know that the rain patterns are already, you know, providing that challenge on the overall country because many of our women are the ones that are providing labor in the agricultural sector. And obviously you and me know that if there's no rain, it means there's no livelihood for these women.
The NGOCC executive director has since called on government and other stakeholders to work together in mitigating the impact of climate change. Mrs. Mwale has since appealed for serious investment in irrigation farming, noting that Zambia has abundant water bodies.
We have been calling for a serious investment in irrigation. Irrigation now must become even more important, and we need to ensure that we expend our energies and resources on strengthening the irrigation system in our country. I mean, Zambia is a land-linked country, but we know that we have a good expanse of water in terms of our rivers and our lakes that can actually be utilized to enhance our irrigation system.
It is imminent today that the unpredictable rainfall pattern has become a challenge to the farming community, especially small-scale farmers who are usually dependent on rain-fed agriculture. Reporting for Yasani News, my name is Mabine Augustine Katungulu.
Our behind-the-scenes crew this week includes Amy DePiro, Allison Raybar, John Gagnon, Joel Hajj-Boutros, Jay Clayton, Catherine Kwok, Namat Carr, Tyler Welsh, Sabrina Merrill, and Amber Sheth. This week's show was produced by Leo Elliott. We'd like to send a special thanks to the prospective students on campus this weekend who came by and helped out. Hope to see you all next fall. I'm Evan Grennan.
And I'm John Gagnon. Until next time, thanks for listening.